TikTok, you don't stop. Stop to the 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 TikTok.
Hi, this is John Amundson. I want to welcome you to the next podcast in our series of podcasts presented for you by the Psychologist Association of Alberta. The purpose of the podcast is to present information that's timely, topical, and even controversial to the membership. I have a single topic podcast for today, and if you've looked at the title, you can see that it has to do with pornography. Years ago, I've been doing these podcasts for a while. Years ago, I did a quick one on porn, and we're just talking about exposure to porn. And in the ensuing period of time, there has been some good empirical and research attention to the issue of porn. And as the title of this podcast suggests, good news, bad news. Relative to the use of pornography and the presence of pornography. Initially, let me go through some demographics, some numbers. In surveying the presence of porn at a societal level, it has been determined that up to one half of internet material relates to sexuality. And predominantly to explicit sexuality. One in four searches, 25% of the searches on the internet have to do with such material. Only 1% of men deny or state they have not seen or not looked at porn on the internet. There was a study of 20-year-olds, a Canadian study actually, and it said that 3/4 of men and 1/3 of women look at porn on a regular basis. Finally, moving into the controversial aspects of pornography, there is questions regarding this concept of porn addiction. Porn addiction has become another one of those things that if we could have bought futures in it, we would have made a lot of money, meaning a brand new thing to throw on the general public and to be used in popular media. The issue of porn addiction would better be subsumed for a small group of people who have obsessive or compulsive tendencies. In other words, those tendencies are already there and porn just became one avenue within which they are exercised. All right, so there's a little demographic. Oh, yeah, here's the other one. This is, Amundson has always said, the average age of exposure to pornography is 11 years old, meaning that kids, have cell phones and or they're doing something else. And up pops. For example, on South Park, one episode, the kids were at the computer and they typed in some phrase like, I'm going to end up making it up, like hunting for jollies or something. And all of a sudden they said, hey, isn't that Cartman's mom, right? In other words, they were looking at something else not related to sexuality, and up it popped. So with many of the kids, guess what? I remember I was at a friend's house and we went out in the sandbox. There were beetles in the sandbox. And I said, oh, let me go look on your computer. Let me see what that beetle is. And I typed in beetle, bam, up came a porn site because in England, a beetle is a term that's used to apply to women. So Amundson used to always say 11. Apparently now it's between 6 and 8 years old that children the first exposure to explicit adult sexuality takes place between 6 and 8 years old. All right, so there's our demographics. We're going to take two positions here. One is this sense that pornography is harmful. And in an article in the Journal of Sex Research, Media and Sexualization, the research from 1995 to 2015, found that there were four or five negative consequences of viewing pornography. The first is a negative or negativity or dissatisfaction with one's own body. In other words, the ideal that is expressed or illustrated in pornography, most of us fall short of that. The second issue is objectification. And objectification reduces the complexity of human relationships or men and women to this object related to sexuality. And this relates to the next one, which is a decreasing sense of women relative to competency and humanity. In other words, they showed that pornography does objectify and dehumanize women. This relates to the next issue, which is sexist beliefs, a gendered and sexist oriented way of viewing men and women, but especially women. And there was tolerance of violence, increased tolerance of violence. So aggressivity associated with sexuality increased. All right. Now, in the journal Current Opinion in Psychology, they were looking at expressing point of view, and that is the utility of pornography and maybe even benefits. And they start off by first criticizing the research, and they use what they call a negativity bias. In other words, it's a problem focus. Limits in all of these studies and any ones that I'll cite as we go forward is a negativity bias, that is correlation rather, that these are studies that have to do with correlation where they'll say this and this side by side. And of course, you know, the issue is the causation. We'll talk about that in a couple other articles that have been turned out. But negativity bias is the big one. That is, you're looking for problems and you find them. So they say the limitations in the literature that exist have to do with this pursuit of negativity. The article in Current Opinion Psychology was The Use and Effects of Pornography in Romantic Relationships, and they found that there was a positive effect. They looked at the benefits of pornography for romantic relationships. Now, going forward, I want to cite B.F. Skinner. And Skinner, years and years ago, this is way before social media of the sort we have today, it would have even been envisioned. This was way before computers. Someone asked him, well, how would you treat sexual dysfunction? He said, oh, pornography. In other words, exposure to explicit sexuality to increase sexual awareness and longing in couples. So there's an honest basis in the applications of pornography, apparently, to clinical practice. Now, Psychological Medicine is a journal that published an article that looked at 100,000 men and women and 5,000 couples. And what they found was that a differential impact on men and women. I got my notes here. With men, they found that the frequency and intensity of porn watching related to feelings of less sexual competency, more specific problems in intimate relationships, and the partners were reported less sexual satisfaction in the relationship. However, with women who were viewing porn, they found there was greater sense of competence and fewer problems, that there was an inspirational and empowering aspect of porn, these are their words, for women, and a disempowering and non-inspiring impact on men. All right, so we, oh boy, okay. Now we got a problem because we've seen some it's good, some it's bad. In a summary article that I took a quick look at, the author, Maria Kornikova, she's a very cool public intellectual. Maria Kornikova said, hey, people are different. And negativity in is negativity out, meaning people already predisposed towards certain asocial, antisocial behaviors and attitudes are going to not benefit from porn. Individuals that come in with a different stance may actually benefit from porn. So here we go, it's typical psychology. The best we can say is different strokes for different folks. Specific to this, in a study that Kornikova cited, that individuals low in agreeableness, you know, we're looking at the big five, that individuals low in agreeableness were going to have more trouble with pornography, and especially with domineering interactions and aggression and a lack of appreciation of the reciprocal nature of sexual interaction. In general, however, all of these effects are reported as modest. So when they say men are going to feel less sexually competent and they're going to be less satisfied in sexual relations if they're watching a lot of porn, it's a modest effect. It is not a huge effect. And that so that when we're asked about porn, we can kind of start with that, well, different strokes for different folks. But here are some of the things that would relate to whether or not it works or whether or not it doesn't work. And the final shot in this was that the more individuals are watching pornography alone, the more likely these modest effects will exist. The more romantic partners have an agreeableness around watching it together, the more benefit there will be to them. But again, common sense, it makes sense. Couples who have negotiated the way they will be with each other in all areas of their lives, spiritually, economically, socially, politically, are going to report greater satisfaction than those that haven't negotiated or neutralized differences. So we may have gone through this whole podcast simply to say, yeah, if it works for a couple, it's wonderful. If it doesn't, or if individuals are inclined to the more solitary sense of this, there are more modestly negative outcomes. I know you want to see me, but you're afraid of what I might have on my mind. One thing you can be sure of.